Welcome to the presentation.
So a father and daughter went fishing together. And they got out to the pier beside the lake, and the daughter was looking at her new pole. And she looked at the hook. She said, "Dad, that is nice. That is a pretty hook. I like that hook. It's shiny. It's new. Ah, Daddy, the fish are going to go nuts over my hook." And so she dropped her hook off one side of the dock, and her dad calmly put a worm on his and cast off the other side. And she was there, fishing away, fishing. And fishing, her dad kept reeling one fish after another. She said, "Dad, you've got the lucky pole." Dad says, "Well, no, that's not the issue." "Well, then what's wrong?" "Well," he said, "what you really need to do is to put something on your hook." He said, "Really? What would I put on my hook?" He said, "A worm." "A worm? Ew! Who would want to eat a worm? What did the worm do wrong? Doesn't God love worms too? Dad, please." She put her hook on, she put a worm on her hook. And lo and behold, she caught fish. What is the point of presentation? What's the purpose? Why do people present things? Why are new cars shiny? Because somebody wants to what? Why do new cars have shiny paint? To get your attention. They want to sell something. Are we trying to sell something to our students? Absolutely. What are the three steps to make a good presentation? There are three. Our goal today is to identify and discuss those three steps for catching our students. And yes, our students are more intelligent and have different tastes than fish. Right. So you may not want to use night crawlers on yours. Just, hint there. The first step is the bait, or we might call this the introduction in a school setting. And the simple point of that is to get their attention. Right? Every lesson should start with some type of bait, and we'll get to that later. It is like the shiny car. It is what catches your eye as you're driving by. The second part is the bite. In the school setting, we call this the explanation. And the idea of the explanation is to keep their attention. This would be like someone getting to take a test drive in a car. They saw that car, now they're driving it, and so on. If you would raise your hand so John can find you, that would be good. The third part is the catch. In the school setting, we would call this the application. And its purpose is to guide the student's attention. In the car selling world, this would be like someone finally driving a brand new car out of the lot. Something I probably will never experience as a teacher. And that's just fine. I'm okay with that. Our takeaway for today. The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. For a criminal to get a reduced sentence, he must own his crime. When he gets in front of the judge, he has to say, "Yes, I was drinking and driving, and I did mistake the dairy farm for a drive-thru," right? Okay. "And it didn't work so well, and it's my fault," right? We aren't criminals, but we need to own our occupation of teaching. A quote by Patrick White. "I forget what I was taught. I remember only what I learned." If they aren't learning, we aren't teaching. That's a pretty strong statement. I'll qualify that in a moment. But to teach, the teacher must cause the student to learn. The teacher is responsible if the student is not learning. The teacher controls the subject, the style, and the speaker. Therefore, the teacher is not only has the ability, but also the responsibility to change the subject, improve the style, and inspire the speaker to equip the student. That being said, be aware that much teaching revolves around students taking three steps forward and two steps backward. That is normal. A-plus students are rare. And just in case you're wondering, I never was one. The master teacher, Jesus himself, had a bad apple in his class. Judas. But now I don't want you all going home saying, I got a room full of Judases, so I don't have to teach. No, that's not an excuse. I want you to be responsible. One last thing about it, that term, if we aren't teaching, they aren't learning. It's not an absolute term. It's about as absolute as someone saying that if you hold a match to a piece of paper, it will burn, right? How many of you all think that's true? Good. All right, I'm going to prove you're wrong, right? My job here to show you that there are exceptions to that rule, right? So we have paper and we have flame and nothing happened. Okay, so obviously sometimes it's not true, right? Same goes for that statement. So it's a statement that applies most of the time. In fact, almost all the time. But there are exceptions. So I don't want you to feel guilty if you end up with a Judas in your classroom. That's my point. To teach, the teacher must not only present new concepts and processes, but also change the way students think and the way they respond to life. Right? It's not just about teaching Sarah 1 plus 1 is 2. It's also teaching Sarah to stick to her work, which is a whole lot harder. Right? To teach is to improve the life of the one being taught. To teach is to cause the student to recreate in their own understanding a new idea or truth. To teach is to cause the student to apply the knowledge and then apply it some more. How do we get a student to apply a new concept? First, we have to get their attention. And that takes us to the first part there, the bait or the introduction. We're going to use the story of Jesus and the woman at the well as an overarching example in this topic. First thing there, it must appeal to your group. I didn't try to do something that did not appeal to you. I hope you all have maybe experienced fishing at some point in time. Or at least understand how to fish, even if you've never done it. Sell yourself. Jesus was sitting there on the side of the well, and he asked for water. He said, give me to drink. That was his opening. He opened himself. If you were paying attention to Ivan Martin's speech this morning, I hope you were, would that have been controlling the situation? No, he was giving the other person control of that conversation. Give me to drink. That was his opening. Dress for success. Ladies, if you're teaching lower grades, wear bright colors. If you're teaching upper grades, wear dark colors. Okay. It can actually make a difference in their perception of you, even in their level of respect. Use active posture, standing or kneeling. If you're going to sit in your teacher's chair, you're going to have to be like Ivan and have those arms moving around and be one of those little bobble toys or something, you know? Where there's going to have to be extra motion going on so that you're going to keep their attention. A seated person, when people see someone seated, often they kind of think, hey, you know, we're kicking back and sipping a cup of coffee and reading a good book idea. That being said, your posture has so much to do with your relationship to your students. For example, if I'm standing up here, I am in a posture of authority. And sometimes that's not the best way to get something across to someone.
Okay? Sometimes if I really need to make the point, I've got to get up close and personal. The teacher is responsible. That's extremely personal. I got inside his personal space. I hope I breathed. It smelled too bad. which is something you should be thinking about as well, by the way. That's beside the point. Your posture makes a huge difference in your contact with your people. And teachers should move around the room, should make personal contact when it's appropriate with their students. Make eye contact. Typically, people are comfortable with about a 2-second eye lock. If it lasts longer than that, the person will typically begin to feel rather singled out, and they often will begin to blush. All right? Excuse me, Vernie. Move. As a teacher, you should be a moving target. Walk. Gesture. Ivan is great at this. I have loved watching his hands move. And I would just like to point out one thing I have noticed many teachers move with their elbows locked to the ribcage. And so their motions are all like this. And it's like they have very short arms. Go ahead and extend your arms. All right? Get them away from your body. Point to things. Globe. Right? Right there's Madagascar. Some of you heard about that today, hopefully. If you turn that on, I'm going to crank it up, and you're going to hear me downstairs.
But
very good. You asked for it. Can you set it outside the door? Thank you, John. Smile. If any of you have heard that you should not smile before Thanksgiving, I'm going to tell you that's not true. Okay? Smile. The first day of school, as your students are walking in the door, you should meet them with a big smile. The back row gets a chance to do that right now. You may stand. Everyone else, please turn around and look at them. And they're going to stand and give you a great big grin. Good job! All right, clap for them. Very good. Very good. Invite them. As you are standing and smiling, you can hold the door open. I actually try to do that on a regular basis for my students. Use welcoming gestures.
Okay, I'm gave up on that. I'm going to shut the door because it's air conditioned in here. And
thank you.
It'll stay cooler even though you think it might not.
And I'll be quieter that way.
Okay, you be quiet. If I hear you, you're fired.
We'll see about that. All right, using welcoming hand motions involves often, once again, moving that elbow away from your side, extending the arm. The second row gets to practice this. Everyone may... who's in front of the second row can turn around and look at them. Second row, you may stand. You need to smile and extend your right arms away from your body so you're not all hitting each other in the face. Okay?
Okay, I have an overrule. I'll open the door.
Okay. You're part of the second row. Donuts or not. Welcoming gesture. Excellent. Thank you. You may be seated. We can all clap for them. Good job, second row. Reassure your students. Many students will enter your classroom with some trepidation about facing you. They're probably just as scared of you as you are of them. So they need some reassurance. You need to be gentle with them. So front row, I'll be gentle with you. Alright? All you need to do is just stand and smile at me, and you don't have to care about the people behind you. Alright? Very good. You may stand. Good job. You may be seated. You may clap for them. Good. Good. Next item there. Sell your subject. Jesus sold his subject immediately. What was that lady coming after when she showed up at the well? Why do ladies go to wells in Arab countries? To get water. What did Jesus start talking about?
Water.
Water. Recently, one of our families had a bear lurking about their property. So we talked about bears at school. Right? We had a fire that burnt the back part of our school property and burnt the building with all the children's playthings in it. Bats, gloves, all kinds of good things. We talked about fires. What happens? Use the things that they're thinking about already. Right?
That can help you get your subject going. Stir curiosity. Jesus showed up at the well, and the lady said, "Hey, you want a drink, but you don't have a jug, bucket." Yeah, she said, "You have no jug. Where with the? How are you going to get that?" She came for water. He asked for water, and there was no way for her, for him to get water. Have any of you wondered about the things on the board? Let's just talk about the one in the far corner there. What does that have to do with this? Anybody know?
Volume,
you're close. Really, really close. Thank you for being willing to guess.
Surface area.
Surface area. That's the formula for the surface area of a sphere. Thank you for being involved. It's okay to be wrong. That's fine. Use the board, right? So my friend Rico is building a house in the Philippines, right? And they build their houses on big stilts because of all the hurricanes that come through there and so on. And his house is going to be 20 feet long and 16 feet wide. How many posts will he need if he needs a post every 4 feet? Right, there we go. We start drawing circles on the board, and that's what that stands for. Circles could be anything. They could be eggs in the chicken basket for all you want. I mean, whatever. But use the board. It can be that simple. All right? Use objects. Anybody know what this is? Obsidian. Thank you for saying that. Who said that? You did? You get to be the first person to touch it and pass it around. You all can touch obsidian. It's also called natural glass. Use stories and don't always keep the end. For example, when I was about 18 years old, I was driving a large truck. I think it weighed about 20 tons. And I came to the top of a great big hill. And at the bottom of the hill, there was a T-junction. And across from the T-junction was a huge oak forest. And as I tapped the brakes to get ready to shift down, the brake pedal went all the way to the floor. Use pictures without explaining them, okay? So does anybody know what this picture is? It's my friend, Rico. All right. Use misquotes, but make them obvious. So Vivian is making cookies, and so she puts in 2 cups of salt, and then she adds... Do you know what students love to do? Students love to connect the teacher. When a teacher makes mistakes in front of a group of students, the students love to connect him or her. They look for those misquotes, and they like to connect them.
Correct.
Correct! Thank you. And by the way, what should she have put in? 2 what of salt? Teaspoons. Very good. See, students, especially when your students are getting that deer in the headlights look, well, you know they're not with you. Just go ahead and say something like that where they go, you know, and you said, what? Yeah, and so on. Go ahead and misquote. And they love catching teachers. Use unpredictability. Heads down, thumbs up. This is a quiz. Heads down, I said, heads down, thumbs up, eyes closed. You may not look. All right, what is the capital of Cuba? Boy, this is tough. Room full of teachers. Okay, what's the capital of Germany?
Frankfurt.
Close. What is the capital of Missouri?
Jefferson.
Good. What is the capital of Alabama? And heads up. There you go. All right. They students love that kind of thing. I don't always want to know what's happening next. And by the way, I need somebody to help pick these guys up, so I'm stepping over the whole thing. Use sizzle. Sometimes you simply need to do something. It may have nothing to do with your lessons, and the only reason you're doing it is to get the student's attention. Thank you, sir. Do I have any brave volunteers? Thank you. You're up close here. Now, this is a normal bottle of Mountain Dew, right? And we're going to, for the sake of this, we're going to take the thing off.
If you would step up here with me, please. Gracie, can you take that with you? Thanks. And these are normal raisins. Right? Come on. Would you grab some raisins, please? Now, for the sake of sizzle, we're going to drop the raisins into the mountain dew. Not a lot. You can do maybe like a couple dozen or something. That will work. Thank you. You drop it back in there. Calm it down for a little bit. And then watch what happens. What is our takeaway for today? That was pretty weak. I want to hear everybody say it. What is the takeaway for today?
The teacher is responsible to cause the students to learn.
Thank you. Build need. This lady showed up and she was thirsty. Jesus said, I have living water. Right? When talking to my students about science, particularly when talking about rust, I remind them of the time that we used the, can't say it now, the shampoo on the classroom carpet. And then we carried the metal desks back into the classroom before the carpet was dry and set the desks on the floor. And you can guess what we were scrubbing off of the floor for the rest of the school term. Right? There were rust spots underneath each of those desks. It was a very real thing they were familiar with. Display value. I have known of teachers whose students were counting on their fingers. It was lower grades. And one of them asked the students, what would you do if, like a friend of mine, your hand got into a saw and cut all your fingers off? Or what about if you're at the grocery store and you have two bags of groceries and somebody walking along asks you what 2 + 5 is? What are you going to do? You know, give them something to help them realize they need to break that habit. Monitor their focus. Command versus demand attention. There's a term another teacher told me, and it's called FOMO. Right on the board here. And this is fear of missing out. All right? You, as a teacher, is your responsibility to be so good that your children are scared of being sick. They don't want to miss what you might do at school tomorrow. All right? It's hard to keep that up all year long, I know. I don't necessarily, but we do try to create that atmosphere where school is interesting enough that people want to be there. Right? That's commanding versus demanding attention and saying, listen up, I'm talking to you. Okay, that puts people on the spot and makes them feel like not listening. Right? Direct students to watch for or listen for things of interest. For example, we are almost to the peak of the Perseid meteor showers. I know we've had some cloudy days here, but even as you're going home, take some time out, go out about 9 o'clock, look toward the east, and you should see about 1 or 2 meteors a minute. And some of them are pretty big. All right. Another thing you might watch for is watch for how many times other teachers here smile. And that is something that I actually struggle with. I don't smile as much as I should while I'm talking. However, Jaden and Derek both do much better at this than I do. If you feel led to time one of the teachers for 5 minutes or so and count the smiles, see what the number is. It can be fun to do things like that and help you keep your attention up. Your introduction must be presented until it is bitten. Just like fishing, right? You can't stop fishing just because the fish didn't bite the first time or you're never going to catch any fish. You keep throwing that lure out there until somebody gets a hold of it. Demonstrate the various angles of coming at any one subject. Be aware that there are basically 4 types of learners. There are those who want to do something. There are those who love to talk about it. They'll come up to the class table and they'll be the ones who, oh, so this is what you're talking about? And that means, and there's chattering away. Lower graders tend to excel at that. And that's okay. That's the way to learn. You can help them with that. There are some who just love to read. They just grab that book and they love sitting there reading the book. They like to learn like that. And there are others
like me who like pictures. I have to look at something. I have to draw it. Try to figure out which of those methods your students prefer. And chances are you will have students that prefer, in the same grade, that prefer different methods. Which means you may need to draw pictures, talk, do something, and read. All right? Typically, we use a lot of lecture. So a polygon is any shape you can make with straight lines, right? That's okay. You can use discussion. For example, how many of you like chocolate? Wow. I hope there's enough here for everybody. All right. Use visual aids. So we're talking about polygons. Does anyone see a polygon up here? Remember, it's a figure that can be made with straight lines. Yes, Rico's hat is a polygon. Now, those lines must connect, see? If those lines don't connect, then my pet pig Polly, who lives in here, will be gone. Right? That is using a story to teach you something. And children love stories. In fact, Jesus taught using stories largely. And we as teachers need to do that. Use five senses. Have students taste something, feel something, smell something. I need four volunteers now. Thank you. Come on up here. Yes, come on up. Two ladies, please. Come on up. You get to come all the way up here with me. If you would, stand right in front of the class table here. One more lady. If we could have one. Yeah, right there. Come on up, please. All right. If you two gentlemen would step over here, turn around, face me. Yep, you get to face me, not the crowd. Okay, we're going to pretend we're having a class here. All right, folks, today we're talking about fractions. All right? Everyone loves learning about fractions and teaching fractions, right? Well, God made bananas for teachers to teach fractions, right? So, this is one what banana? That's a whole banana. Now, if I go like this, each of these is one half. Now, I'm going to cut a piece for each of you. There you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. There you go. Now, each of them has one
quarter.
But this is still a half. That's right. Good. All right. Now, you each get one as well. Now, you will each get to peel your own banana. Please peel them. All right. And now, do you know how to divide a banana into thirds? See, God made bananas so that we can learn fractions. Each piece of a banana can easily be divided into thirds. Just gently squeeze it and it should pop apart. Okay. Squeeze it a little bit more towards this end. Do you see where the thirds are? There you go. You're starting to pop apart. Have you done this before? There you go. There you go. Pop it into thirds and eat one of them. Okay, now the rest of you are going to tell us how much of the banana is gone now. Each of them ate one. Yes. One third of the banana is gone. How much is left?
Two thirds.
Now the two ladies are each going to eat one more third. Ah, then you're not a lady! Okay, so everyone except one ate one third. How much of the banana is left?
I was eating a piece of the other third.
That's it. You're good. Okay, so we did that last. Each of these guys has two thirds of one fourth. Each of these has only one third of one fourth left. What part of the banana is left? It's getting complicated now, right?
Half.
Thank you. Very good. Go ahead and everybody eat one more piece. All right. Gentlemen, if you would hold your piece that's left remaining up for the others to see, what part of the banana is left now?
One fourth.
You're close. One sixth. You may eat that last piece of banana and be seated. If you need to wipe your hands off, there, I do have a couple napkins up here. If you're good. Thank you for being willing to be a part of that demonstration. Fractions taste like bananas. They taste like Kit Kats. They taste like Hershey's bars. Anything you can divide evenly into pieces. And the students can taste, can change fractions from everyone's worst nightmare to, yay, we are studying fractions today. We're going to get to eat something. All right. Use your own imagination. The vast majority of Jesus' examples came from imaginations that things that he thought of in his own mind. For example, do you know what this is? It's the most important part of a sentence, see? It is a pretty cat.
There we go. All right. The bite or explanation. Jesus revealed that what he was really talking about was something spiritual. And this must be tied to as many known facts as possible. And remember that the point of this is to keep their attention. You've gotten your students' attention, they're with you, and now you're going to guide them into the new material. Use review. Most classes should begin with you asking the students to recall something they already know. To illustrate this, if all quichels are shipes, and some shipes are zorties, are all zorties quichels? Let's try that again. If all Angus are cows, and some cows are Holsteins, are all Angus Holsteins? See what happens once I start using terms that you know, okay? We realize that quichels, shipes, and zorties is what our students think when we start using new terms and things they have no clue about. They feel just as bewildered as you did, okay? So start with where they know and get them to the place that they don't know. Jaden will be talking more about this in the seven laws of teaching. I'm going to let him cover more of that in that one. Use the student. Use their name in a story. For example, Ashley is skydiving. She is falling at a rate of 60 feet per second. If she has 1 mile to fall, how long will it be till she hits the ground? Right? Okay. Ashley's pretty interested in this because she doesn't want to hit the ground too soon. Okay. All right. Very good. Use their home life. Talk about their animals. If they've got a dog, talk about their dog. Talk about their toys. A bike uses a pulley when you start teaching about pulleys. Talk about their chores. If Sarah is washing 500 dishes and she has washed 1/4 of them, how many dishes has she washed? Right? So, use the board. Would anyone volunteer to diagram this sentence? And that should be a capital C there. Anyone want to volunteer to diagram that for us? No? We're teachers and we don't know how to diagram? You see, the point is, while teachers should use the board, they should not be the only person using the board. We need students up at the board, too. I'd really like for somebody to come up and diagram it, by the way. No volunteers. That's okay. We'll do that later. Use diagrams. So I'll be the guy diagramming, right? Okay, what is the subject of this sentence?
You.
You. Okay. What's the predicate? Cause. You cause what?
Learning.
Okay, now you can see our takeaway for today. And just to reinforce that, we're going to have the first and the third row stand up and say our takeaway from today, please. At this moment, do that. The teacher
is responsible to cause the student to learn.
You may be seated and you all can clap for them. Good job, people. Use objects. Does anyone know what this is?
Stone.
It's more than that. It's actually a tool. I'll tell you about it later. All right. And use figurative speech. When you're trying to explain things to people, most of the time they're going to ask you, what is it
like?
Right? So tell the children, oh, it's like a chicken, except it has a longer neck and spots all over it. But
Maybe that's not the best thing to use to describe a giraffe. All right. Use examples, realistic examples. So Andrea is making candles, and she's selling them for $10 a piece, but her expenses are $7 a candle. What's her profit? All right. So it's a realistic idea there, and so on. The students can start exercising their mind. Must be reeled in or limited. When that lady was there, she said, "I want this living water." Jesus said, "Go call your husband." Oops. Problemo here. In this sentence. How many people went fishing? Let's back up. Where should we put commas in that sentence?
After Bob.
After Bob. Where else?
Billy.
After Billy? Sure. Where else? Y'all need to be a little faster here if we can. I need your help.
Joe.
After Joe? Sure.
Jim.
Jim. Where else?
John.
John. Where else?
Laura.
Bing.
Bing.
Rose.
John.
John.
Alan.
Alan.
Peachy.
Peachy. Joe. Okay. That was a good try. And this is what I'm talking about reeling people in. You see, actually, I come from the Midwest. Billy Joe Jim Bob is one guy. All right? And here at the Institute, one of the board members' wives is named Laura. So she is John Laura. Right? And one of the others is named Rose, and so she is Bing Rose. And then, you know, we're Mennonites, right? So one of them is actually John Allen. And the guy who delivers peaches is Peachy Joe. There you go. All right, what about this sentence? It needs a little bit of punctuation somewhere.
A comma after her.
A comma after her. There should be a semicolon here. The woman, without her, man is nothing. Or you can just have it like this. Either way is fine, as far as I'm concerned. Well, maybe not. That's what I'm talking about. Students have to learn that you can't put a comma everywhere, or it might change the meaning of things. Right? Demonstrate the process. What to do, how to do it, and the why we should leave for the students to guess as many times as possible. Too often we give the students the reason for everything. For example, we may give them the reason for the formula length times width times height, rather than just giving them the formula and letting them process in their minds why that finds the volume of a rectangular solid. All right? Lead your students. Have problems for your students to attempt or discuss. Has anyone figured out this one? Let me help you think through it. All right? 75% we know is the same as three what?
Quarters.
Three quarters. What is one quarter of 32?
Eight.
What is three times eight?
24.
There, that was easy, right? Okay, and we'll go on. Involve your students. Okay? So I'm going to involve you all. Our takeaway for today is good. And now I need three volunteers. I'm going to ask for you three right up here. Go ahead and come on up. Yeah. And have your wife stand in the center there. That's going to be the only safe place for her. Okay, we have this sentence up here. This sentence has a direct object in it, right? And it is Tom, hit, Dan. All right, for right now, you're Tom, you're hit, and you're Dan. Okay, Tom, go ahead and hit Dan.
Hit him.
Yes.
Ow.
However you feel led. Think of yourself as a fifth grader. Go for it. If you were in fifth grade, and I told you to hit him in the classroom, it's the first time a teacher ever said that you could hit somebody, how
okay.
would you do it?
Well, he said. Really?
Yes. Good. All right. You may sit down. And suddenly, this thing of direct objects and the direct object receiving the action, Dan isn't going to forget what it feels like to get hit. He knows that the direct object receives the action of the verb. Thank you all. You may be seated. Give them a nice little round of applause. That was tough. Very good.
questions. For example, if an upset person is disgusted, then is someone who is happy gusted? Master the irreducible minimum. So the shortest term that I can use for the teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn is these two words. If you can't remember the takeaway from today, remember cause learning. That is as short as I can get it. All right, that's why I wrote that up there. Make it bite-sized. If you're teaching, calculate your students' normal attention span by multiplying their age times one. Right? In other words, if you have a 7-year-old, their attention span is approximately 7 minutes. Now, we do not expect 13-year-olds to have only a 13-minute attention span. We want them to expand that. But they come, that's the way they come from the factory. Okay? Factory specs is 1 minute per year of age. And we have to try to stretch that. Just be aware of that. So sometimes we have to get these things bite-sized. Keep your main points of any class to 3 main points or fewer. All right? Give a takeaway for your students. Say, if you know this, you're good to go. For example, verbs or action words. Okay? Leave it at that. So, must be netted or grasped by the student. Teach to satisfy their needs. Jesus was trying to satisfy that woman at the well's need. Teach them until the lights come on. So that student is struck with the idea. Then we get to the catch or application. The point of teaching is to equip these students for use. You know that woman that was with Jesus? She was so excited, she left her water pot. She came there for water. She left her water pot and ran into that city and told the people, I met somebody that's worth talking about now. She spread the word. It must be practiced. Many times, we as teachers spend lots of time telling and not enough time having the students practice, right? If you look at the Bible, approximately half of the Bible talks about what to do, right? Good teachers spend half of their time having the students do things. They need to be practicing. So, just for the sake of practice, the back row, you're up again. You may stand up and say our takeaway for the day one more time. Smile, extend your arms while you're doing it. We've got to do the whole bit here.
The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
You may be seated. The rest of y'all can clap for them. Thank you. Working equals learning. Who's responsible?
The teacher.
Repetition equals learning. What is our takeaway for today? Notice, we're after this, right? It takes about 8 times of anything for students to get it, at least. And actually, for most people, it's closer to 12. We're getting close to that. Applying equals learning. The more realistic the application, the better. Connect your lessons to your students' lives whenever you can. And that's something that's going to take you getting to know what happens at your students' homes, right? The more better you know your students, the better you'll be able to teach them. And the more it supplies a need for them, the better. For example, you may have a child who carries water to the cows every day, for example. And he comes to school one day saying, you know, my arm's a little sore because I'm carrying that 5-gallon bucket every morning. Does anybody know what you should tell him to do? Should tell him that we need to balance his load. If he would carry 2 5-gallon buckets with 2.5 gallons in each bucket, it would be easier for him. All right? You're supplying a need. When students come to school and they talk about something that they're dissatisfied with, if there is something you can teach them that will help supply that need, do it. All right? This is not about just learning things in books. It is about supplying your students' needs, and your students will be different from mine. They will be different from the person sitting beside you. All right? You will have to get to know them. Must be corrected. How many of you are so looking forward to checking? Yay! I didn't think so. But it's part of the deal. Jesus corrected gently. When he asked her, do you have a husband? Go get your husband. She said, I don't have a husband. And Jesus said, that's right, because you had 5. But he said it in a nice way. All right? What would you think was wrong with this?
It needs a comma. And so you gently say, you know, Sally, this doesn't quite fit our Christian ethics. let's correct that one. And we do that gently, and then suddenly it looks good, right?
All right. Give constructive criticism. Allow your students to struggle, right? Sometimes their struggle. Ask Sally, what was wrong with that sentence? Let her figure it out. Use challenge. And Joshua did this. He said, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. It's up to you. Sometimes, particularly when dealing with moral things, you know, I won't do that because that's dishonest. It's going to be your choice whether you'll do this, whatever it is. Or I will not take sides on this political issue because I'm a citizen of a heavenly country. It's up to you what you want to do about that. Okay? Those are things that you as a teacher are going to face. And you need to know what you're going to do when you get into those deals. And it's better to challenge them to take the right position than it is to tell them that that's what they're supposed to do. All right? Must be reviewed. Once again, I told you it takes about 8 to 12 repetitions. So we're going to go ahead and repeat the takeaway one more time. Here you go.
The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
Thank you. Present jingles for your students. These can help. For example, in distance, rate, and time, if you have the distance, you divide. A little bit of alliteration there, and it helps students keep things right. Add extra facts. For example, are you aware when studying about Anabaptists that the vast majority of the Anabaptist heroes we talk about, Felix Mond, George Blaurock, and so on, were men of about 22 to 27 years old? We're going to wrap this up real quick here. We're going to jump all the way down to the bottom of your page where you're going to be filling in the bait. What is the purpose of a bait? Or what is it in the school setting? We would call it the introduction. And the purpose is to get their attention. The bite in the school setting, we call that the... And the purpose is to... And the catch. And the purpose is to... And fill in the blanks, the
teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
Thank you for your attention. You all have done excellently.